What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, joined as always by my co-host Tyler Rowe, and today we are going to discuss everything that went down in week 10 of the NFL season, what it means for fantasy football, and we're also going to highlight some guys you might want to pick up off the waiver wire headed into week 11. You know, it's November, folks. It's the time of year where, you know, time's running out to make that playoff bid. Every single move that you make from here on out is super important, and we are so glad to be part of your roster management journey. So before we get into all of that and get into some of the games, Tyler, how you doing?
Doing great over here, man. Lions came in with a great W over the weekend. Expected, but just good to see a team that kind of fell flat the week before against the Vikings really turn it on. Dan Campbell took over play calling, really got Jameson Williams involved. The fantasy teams did well. No complaints from my side, Herms. Just excited to be here with you talking some ball.
1,000%. Although I do believe there are some people who have valid complaints when it comes to week 10. And those people are probably Las Vegas Raiders fans, because they did not look very good once again on Thursday night in a loss to the Denver Broncos. But to be honest, the Denver Broncos didn't really look that good either. This was a 10-7 game, a classic vintage Thursday night football sort of matchup. I guess really my only takeaways from this is I'm disappointed that Brock Bowers only had one catch. That really definitely sunk me in a couple of leagues. And then also some interesting stuff on the Broncos side of the ball with their pass catchers. But I want to hear from you what your big takeaways were from this matchup.
Yeah, I think from the Raiders side of the ball, you have to respect the fact that they're playing the Broncos, and the Broncos are a very, very good defense. So I'm not panicked at all with Brock Bowers. If we're like, oh, we're going to get the Brock Bowers of, you know, the week before where he dropped 30 to 40 points, so we're going to get this Brock Bowers going forward, we're going to get the better Brock Bowers. I mean, I'm definitely in on Brock Bowers as a top two tight end going forward. This does not scare me whatsoever. We know the Broncos are one of the better defenses in the NFL. And then Jeanne T continues to be, you know, it's funny because he is a fantasy gem in some ways. But like, if you look at where he was drafted, you could almost make an argument that maybe Jeanne T is a little bit of a disappointment. But either way, he's still a start. I believe Brock Bowers has really, you know, rejuvenated this offense going forward. I think it will. This is just a really tough matchup. So from the Raiders side, it's really just Bowers and Jeanne T, and we can move on. I did want to note that Tyler Lockett is getting legit play over the Jack Besh, who I expected that. And then like when Myers left, I thought Besh was going to come in there and get some run. Like, hey, you drafted a rookie wide receiver in the second round. You traded away one of your veteran wide receivers. Why not get your rookie some run to see what he's got? But no, we know what's going on here. The old cronyism. Look at the head coach. Look at the quarterback. Of course, hey, the corpse of Tyler Lockett is getting snapped. So no more really notes from the Raiders side there. And then going to the Broncos, this was a huge disappointment, right? I had the Broncos pegged and a lot of their playmakers pegged to have a great Thursday night football. This is a really easy matchup. The Raiders have been a cake matchup for wide receivers, a cake matchup for quarterbacks. Shoot, I was even putting Bo Nix in my, you know, top five quarterbacks for my rankings and looked like an absolute idiot this week. So I don't really know what to do with the Broncos pieces. I can tell you right now, there's really no Broncos player that I really trust. I think this was the week where I wanted to see something out of Cortland Sutton. Things have been trending Troy Franklin's way for quite a bit. And I was like, all right, maybe it's a little blip in the radar. And I don't believe it's a blip in the radar anymore. I do think Troy Franklin and Sutton are still flexible, but I don't think we're going to get anything we really wanted to out of them. And the final piece I'd want to hammer home here is just looks like J.K. Dobbins had a foot injury. Could mean some time missed. I highly doubt RJ Harvey is on waivers, but, you know, could be a nice bailout for the people who drafted Harvey pretty early.
I have some shares personally that I would love to see some payoff from. But yeah, I just want to quickly highlight one thing, you know, especially when it comes to this Broncos passing attack. This was the fifth game this season that Bo Nix has thrown for under 200 passing yards. That's just wild, man. He has been kind of useful for fantasy sometimes, but he's taken a bit of a step back from last year, and that has been a bit of a disappointment to me personally. But one thing that definitely did not disappoint people was Jonathan Taylor in the game that happened over in Berlin against the Atlanta Falcons. My man was out here with 244 rushing yards and three touchdowns, also had some catches, did some stuff in the receiving game as well. But boy, what an absolute stellar performance from a guy who, I know the NFL and the writers like to give the MVP award to quarterbacks, but I think Jonathan Taylor might actually have a pretty legitimate case.
He does, man. I believe the last non-quarterback who won it was AP in 2012. And he's certainly having a year like that. So it should be talked about at the very least, even though I think we know that they're always going to give it to a quarterback. But I'm absolutely with you, Herms. What he's doing right now is transcendent. It's incredible. What a show for the folks over there in Germany. We have I'd say there's probably a reputation that we send some pretty crappy games overseas, and this was not one of them. This was not one of them. And I think what even makes it more impressive is Jonathan Taylor truly had to do this for the Colts to win, because Daniel Jones channeled his giant self in this game. I mean, I think it was, seven sacks, three turnovers, four turnovers in this one. It was a tough one. Daniel Jones did everything he could to try to lose it.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. Three fumbles, one lost. You know, kind of, you know, a little bit of what we saw in that Steelers matchup. And I still think Daniel Jones is going to be super good and everything down the stretch, but it has been a little bit of a rough patch, that is for sure. But I got to say, despite his struggles, some of these pass catchers are still performing very, very well. I want to shout out my guy, Alec Pierce. I mean, he's a name that I've brought up on this show a handful of times as a guy that, managers, if you need a flex play, a big play threat that has a great connection in his offense that regularly sees looks, just go pick up Alec Pierce and stick him in your lineup. And I don't know how many weeks in a row I'm going to have to include him as my top wide receiver choice off the waiver wire, but he is only rostered in 36.5% of ESPN leagues and 42% of Yahoo leagues. I think that's just absolutely nuts. This guy is a must roster player.
Yeah, it's getting to that point. And back on the Daniel Jones thing, so thanks for correcting me. I think he had one interception and one lost fumble, and then he put a couple more on the ground. So just want to be clear there on there. I believe it was seven sacks. It was bad. But I still prefer Pittman down the stretch, but I think it's pretty safe to say Alec Pierce over Downs at this point in time feels like a pretty safe thing to say. You know, if you had asked me if I prefer Pierce or Pittman for the rest of the season, I would probably still lean Pittman's way, but I'm with you that Alec Pierce should absolutely be on rosters. He's on an absolute heater right now, having himself a nice, 4-year breakout. So yeah, absolutely good for Alec Pierce, kind of playing a part in this huge step up we're seeing from the Colts. And then, you know, Tyler Warren is exactly who we thought he was. So it's one of those things where I don't think I got anything else to say from the Colts side. You?
No, not really. But when it comes to the Falcons side of this equation, I do have some questions in terms of how interested you are in Tyler Algier as somebody that people could pick up off the waiver wire. Yes, he is more of a handcuff option. He's probably going to have his maximum value if anything happens to Bijan Robinson, knock on wood. Obviously, we're not cheering for that, but he's reached double-digit fantasy points in a handful of these games this season, and he found the end zone twice. I don't know, dude. He occasionally gets some decent run. They use him out in the red zone pretty frequently. Is this somebody that you would consider going out there and acquiring, or is he just a little bit too much of a handcuff without the consistency of standalone?
I mean, I certainly would want him on my bench. Like, I don't think if you have a champion level team or a team that's really going to make a run that you ever really are in a spot to start Tyler Algier. But in a pinch, I think he's more than fine. I'm concerned, although it's a smaller sample size. I think right now it's safe to say, is Tyler Algier the goal line back? And it seems like that's kind of the case. I mean, Bijan has always kind of been propped up because he's their second best wide receiver. You know, and that's just a fact of life. And he gets so much through the air that Bijan gets it done and his floor is amazing. But if he's not going to be getting the ball around the goal line, it does kind of beg the question of, you know, is Bijan a locked and loaded kind of top three RB? You know, we're going to have to wait and see. I'll probably still keep ranking him like that. And, you know, he's clearly a top 10 RB. I'm not taking anything away from him. But, like, you know, when we get up there talking, like, you know, guys like CMC and Jonathan Taylor, who are truly getting everything. And for a running back to not get those preferred high-value touches around the goal line is something to be a little concerned about. No, we're not, you know, benching. No, we're not selling Bijan. But just kind of like, hey, let's just keep watching to see how this unfolds. I don't really have anything else, you know, from the pass catcher side. You know, Drake London is great. But like, I don't think we have any interest in Mooney or Pitts unless you're kind of in a little bit of a pinch, right? Other than that, is we just kind of lock onto those players and we move along. That's where I sit on the Falcons.
I'm completely with you, and that's why we're just going to take this opportunity to transition into our next contest, a loss that the Giants sustained at the hands of the Chicago Bears, a loss that ultimately led to the firing of head coach Brian Daboll. That is a bit of a kind of shocking piece of news, only within the context that GM Joe Shane is still going to be involved. I don't know. That's an entirely different debacle. Maybe a conversation better served for a different podcast. But the other notable piece of news that applies directly more to fantasy is that Jackson Dart, unfortunately, suffered a concussion, was ruled out. We generally don't see quarterbacks play the following week when they get concussed.
Most players this year, Herms. Like, I feel like in years past, some players have gotten concussions on Sundays and have been able to be cleared and play the next week. But this year seems a little different, that if you do suffer concussion on Sunday, that you're not going to play him with you. I don't think we see Jackson Dart at all in week 11. He's been playing kind of reckless. It's been beautiful to watch, but this is kind of the, you know, there are repercussions to your actions. And frankly, I do not believe that the Giants lose this game if Jackson Dart finishes this game. I believe this is a win for the Giants if we didn't have to see Russell Wilson. It's funny, if Jackson Dart didn't get a concussion, maybe Daboll doesn't get fired. But hey, we're not in a what-ifs scenario here. I don't start anybody on this offense with Russ Wilson under center in week 11. Do you?
No, but I am kind of curious, just given the whole state of everything, what if they go with Jameis Winston? I don't think the fans really want to see Russell Wilson again. If that does happen for any reason, are we going to be interested in anybody in that scenario, or are you just going to kind of feel similarly?
I mean, we would be back. We'd be back, and the pass catchers would be back. I mean, I think Theo Johnson, Wandell, and even Slayton would be interesting, because we know there's no better player to play fantasy football YOLO ball than Jameis Winston. He will huck that ball 40 times with a reckless abandon. Doesn't care if he throws three interceptions. He's just getting that ball down the field and trying to score some people some points. So I would be at least interested in like a bye week fill-in or a streamer for most of those guys. I'd be a heck of a lot more interested in all these names if Jameis Winston was under center. But with Russ, man, I can't see myself wanting to move forward. I think I mentioned Slayton. I think he had a hamstring injury and he might be out for a couple weeks. So Wandell does get a little more interesting now that I just looked at my notes and reminded myself of that. And then Singletary and Tracer in a pretty gross split, pretty unpredictable, but they both should be rostered because there's definitely situations when you might have to plug them in going forward.
I agree. And honestly, Devin Singletary, as gross as it kind of sounds, especially if we do get Russell Wilson, is my top waiver target at the running back position. He was more efficient with his touches than Tyrone Tracy in this contest. Something I mentioned in last week's usage report, you know, I kind of maybe it sounded like I was just overreacting to the one game sample. Oh, maybe we picked the wrong guy. Tyrone Tracy wasn't very good, but it's the second straight performance in which he was outplayed by the veteran, even if it was only by a slight margin. So that is kind of my logic as far as that goes. On the Bears side of the ball, there's a lot of different things we could talk about. So up to you, wherever you want to start there.
I mean, pass catchers go. I mean, it's really Roma Dunze is like the way we want to go with this. I started DJ Moore in this one. That was a zero. That's about as bad as it could possibly get, man. So interesting to see how the tight end continues to shake out. We did, I believe, see Komet in this one. I don't have the snaps in front of me, but clearly wasn't exactly like a whole Loveland takeover like we wanted it to. Caleb continues to be a solid streamer. He has kind of put together two good games after having two really bad games. But again, I would say preferred streamer with Caleb. I'm not ready to say Caleb Williams is an every week locked in starter. And then the final piece is what everyone was looking for was, what is this running back room going to look like with after the Mung Night breakout? And it was pretty much exactly, I think, what we highlighted, Herms, after in our last recap was, okay, it's going to be like 55-60% Swift. Swift's going to be the main pass catcher. Maybe Mung Night is going to be more of the goal line. It's kind of exactly what happened, right? Swift is the guy you want in this backfield, right? He's going to get more carries. He's a little bit more explosive. He's going to catch the passes, and that's what we really want to see. But, you know, obviously Mung Night's got a role there. He's a hard runner. Seems like he's going to probably get some goal line opportunities. Going to get enough looks. I believe the snap count was around 60-40. So I think we nailed it in terms of what we thought we would see, but it does make them, you know, still somewhat usable.
And I think we nailed it as far as that game goes as well. So we can transition into our next one before we take our break. The Buffalo Bills did not show up to play against the Miami Dolphins, man. Losing 30-13, that's got to be a little embarrassing, especially for a Dolphins team that's kind of been struggling this year. There's a lot of different places we could go with this one, but I guess I will just kind of highlight the main injury that I think people need to be aware of was Dalton Kincaid with his hamstring issue in the second half got ruled out. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. I don't think we're interested in any of the tight ends if that happens. Maybe Dawson Knox, who knows? But do you have any other thoughts on these pass catchers or just anybody else on this Bills offense from this one?
We can't have a podcast without mentioning that Mecole Hardman, I believe, is now a Buffalo Bill. So, it'll fix it, man. Bills fans are down bad, man. I've been listening to some of them talk, and like they're talking about missing their window and it's all over, and it's like they just didn't add anybody, and it's just all so blah. And the only piece they really had, in my opinion, that was doing well was Dalton Kincaid, and now he's officially week to week. Yeah, you know, let's read between the lines here. They're not talking about IR, so it's less than four, right? Yeah. And they say week to week. To me, that means 2, maybe 3 weeks. They're going to be out with Dalton Kincaid for a couple weeks, and they really don't have anyone else to pass this ball to, man. It could get ugly real fast. Their best weapon, James Cook, is not a pass-catching running back, so it's tough. Like, it's tough to see Kincaid go down. It's tough to lose. I mean, losing to the Dolphins, respectfully, is pretty rough. This is why I love the NFL. We just saw, like, the week before, the Panthers go to Lambeau and beat the Packers, and then this week that was like a 13.5-point dogs come out with a straight up W. And then in this game, I don't remember seeing the line before it started. It wasn't 13, but it was probably pretty good. And to see the Dolphins just beat the Bills like this, man, the Bills looking like they just beat the Chiefs, and then you lose to the Dolphins. I mean, this is why the NFL is great, man. Anybody can win any night. So I have no, like, right now with Dalton Kincaid out, it's pretty much the same it was before. But, you know, Josh Allen's a start, James Cook's a start, but there's nothing else there for me from the Bills side of the ball, man. I'm ready to go to the Miami side if you'd like to, and I don't have a ton there either.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like Khalil Shakir, but even then, that's just like a floor thing. He's not particularly exciting. Nobody, you know. Nobody's thrilled to put him out there, but people are very excited with Devon Achane. And I'm just going to briefly share this fun fact because it's something that I researched for the upcoming usage report that will be on ftnfantasy.com on Wednesday. Devon Achane is currently pacing for a career high 112 targets. So I went back and just looked in recent history, going back all the way to 2015, of just how many running backs have hit that 100 plus target threshold. And the fun thing about Achane's performance, not only is he just doing all of this incredible work as a pass catcher, he is going to end up with the highest number of rushing yards at his current pace at 1,326 if he keeps this going. So he's slowly just evolving into one of these incredible fantasy superstar assets, no matter how bad this Miami Dolphins offense is. And I just thought that was kind of impressive, and I just really wanted to give him a shout out.
Love the deep dive, Herms. Those usage reports are absolute money. If you're not checking them out, you're doing yourself a disservice. Love the work and the research you put into that stuff. Always coming up with great nuggets like that. I mean, it's straightforward with the Miami Dolphins, Achane and Waddle. Great starts every single week. You know, we talked before the season about, you know, we had interest in the Dolphins because we believe their target tree to be so condensed, right? That was a reason we're like, you know, I don't think we foresaw that they would be this bad. But after Jonnu Smith got traded to your Steelers, we're like, well, the ball's really just going to go to a couple players, and then Tyreek goes down. And we're like, well, the Dolphins are way worse than we thought they were. But they really only have two places to go with this ball. That's Jalen Waddle, who, in my opinion, is probably going to finish as a wide receiver too, and then Achane, who's going to probably finish in the top five as long as they stay healthy, right, regardless of how bad this team is. And in some ways, being bad is helpful for them because maybe things change after this Bills game, but they're probably going to have to throw the ball a lot. And that means a lot going to Waddle and a lot goes to Chan. So I don't have a ton else. I guess if I just to shout out a little bit here, is Greg Dulcich has come out from the grave here. In your regular fantasy or redraft leagues, you have no interest in this. But if you're in one of those deep dynasty leagues, maybe it's a tight end premium league, I think he deserves a bench spot. Just shout out Greg Dulcich. If you're new to the fantasy streets, he was a favorite of some analysts for years as like a top option. Did not end up panning out, but it's always good to see a player that you thought was, you know, not literally, but figuratively dead, at least come out there and get some snaps. Didn't do a whole lot, but he's out there running routes. He's the tight end one now. Just a little fun tidbit there. Shout out Greg Dulcich.
Absolutely. Shout out our boy Timmy from the Happy Hour crew. We have fun here. I remember him and I going back and forth at the time. Dulcich versus Pat Freiermuth. Neither of them ended up with quite the careers we were hoping for, but we have tons of time to talk about Pat Freiermuth and all of the other games that happened on this Sunday slate on the other side of our break. This is the Crossing Routes Podcast. Please do not go anywhere.
Attention all FTNers. This is C.H. Herms from the Crossing Routes Podcast, here to let you know that our partners at DraftKings Pick 6 have a deal you don't want to miss. New DraftKings customers, this one's for you.
When you play $5 or more on your first paid Pick 6 entry, you'll get $50 in bonus picks instantly. That's right. You play $5, you get $50 in bonus picks to keep building your slips and take your shot at big payouts. Wow, wow, wow. Sounds pretty cool. Just use promo code FTN to sign up and start playing. If you've been thinking about trying Pick 6, now's a great time to get in. Just use promo code FTN to sign up, and all new DraftKings customers can play $5, get $50 in bonus picks instantly. It's that simple. So let's build some slips. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 plus. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable Pick 6 bonus picks that expire in 14 days. Ends November 3rd, 2025 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Crossing Routes Podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. I am still Herms. He is still Tyler Rowe, and we are still talking about week 10 of the NFL season and all the fantasy football fallout. And our next game is a team, both teams who wear purple, a victory of the Baltimore Ravens over the Minnesota Vikings. The Baltimore side of the ball is interesting, but I'm going to have to just start with the Vikings and the fact that JJ McCarthy, I made a big deal about this team in the preseason. I know. I get it. He has not looked particularly good. There are very obvious limitations with this offense with JJ McCarthy under center. However, I do want to remind people that was his fourth career NFL start, and he missed his entire rookie season due to injury. He hasn't even played that many organized football games ever since he left college for all these different reasons. So I'm trying to be as polite and patient with him as I can. But even that said, it's hard to inspire a lot of confidence for these key pass catchers, especially when the leading receiver from this game was Jalen Naylor with 124 yards and a touchdown. What do we make of this offense in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we've watched a lot of quarterbacks do really well in this passing offense, it seems, and that's just not how this offense seems to be operating with J.J. McCarthy. For fantasy, people probably wish they had Darnold back. Listen, you're right about J.J. McCarthy, but he's young, too. He's like the youngest starting quarterback, I think, in the NFL. Maybe he figures it out, maybe he doesn't, but it's pretty clear that I don't think he's going to be anything that Sam Darnold was this year. Right. And we think about what we loved about the Vikings offense. We're looking at 2024, right? It was an absolute just so much meat on the bone for us to chomp on every single week from all of our Vikings pass catchers and all Vikings players. That's not what we're getting here for the rest of the season. JJ McCarthy to me is like maybe a streamer. I'm not really looking for him in any type of one QB league. You're obviously probably starting Addison and you're obviously starting, you know, Justin Jefferson, but I think there's going to be a little more volatility, I think, than we're used to. Hockenson is probably a guy you don't want to get out there, but if I had to highlight something, it would be Aaron Jones has just completely reclaimed this lead role. This is not a split. And Jordan Mason's always been more of a backup, kind of a mud runner, in my opinion. Tough runner, but a mud runner. And it's very clear that this is a team that wants to get Aaron Jones going. He is the lead back here. I expect Aaron Jones to be an RB2 rest of season as long as he can stay healthy. Obviously, he's been battling some injury. He has for the last couple of years in his career. But for now, I think Aaron Jones I don't know if he's a buy low because, you know, he's been pretty solid from what he's been able to do lately. But I do think that folks are going to be able to depend on Aaron Jones going forward, as J.J. McCarthy's been very good at handing off the football through college. And now he's doing a really good job of it now. So if I had to take one thing away from this, it's like, yeah, we got to temper expectations of these pass catchers. But, man, this is Aaron Jones's backfield.
Definitely so. And swapping over to the other side of this game and keeping it in their backfield, Derrick Henry still gets a ton of work in a lot of these games, right? Like, what I'm about to say is not some sort of like, oh my gosh, this is super panic on Derrick Henry, because he's been fine. But in games where he doesn't find the end zone, he hasn't quite been vintage Derrick Henry. So I guess that's just my weird way of asking, are you concerned about him or this offense at all, especially in these kinds of games where they either win it pretty handily or they get so far behind for some reason that Justice Hill has to come in and be that guy in that sort of negative game script? Does that concern you at all for the rest of the season?
I'd like to say no. I like the Ravens to kind of come through and do well going forward. Lamar is Lamar. We know he's great. I mean, Zay Flowers is, you know, pretty slow and steady. You're not getting a ton out of him, but like it's good enough, especially in PPR leagues. But, you know, I look at the schedule coming up for the Ravens. Like, they got the Browns, which is a fairly tough defense, but beatable, especially through the air. They get the Jets, you can beat. They get the gift of the Bengals, the Steelers, which God knows what Steelers defense you're going to get. You could be getting a top three defense or a bottom three defense that week. Who knows? And then they get the Bengals again. So for me, I'm just kind of looking at the upcoming schedule for the Ravens, and it's maybe some underrated defenses, but these aren't tough games. These are so it's the Browns, the Jets, the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Bengals. That's what the Ravens got coming up. So like, they could easily just win five straight right here. And those are, especially I'm looking at the games against the Bengals coming up. And Steelers haven't been that great against the run either. I mean, we always talk about Derrick Henry and winter is coming. No one wants to, you know, by this point in time, players are beaten up. They're tired. Their bodies are hurting. The last thing you want to do in November and December is tackle Derrick Henry when it's cold outside. So I'm not panicked. I think it's going to be okay. Obviously, Derrick Henry is maybe showing some signs of not being able to be just a huge difference maker anymore. But I still think I'm not panicked on Derrick Henry at all. Am I talking myself into buying low on Derrick Henry? I think I might be talking myself into buying low on Derrick Henry here. So we know who to trust in this offense. You know, Mark Andrews is going to be a fine tight end. Like I just talked about, like Hockenson. I'd much rather prefer to have Mark Andrews on my team than Hockenson, to be completely clear. But I think that kind of it's pretty straightforward for me. But hey, let's just put it out there. I think Derrick Henry might be a little bit of a buy low if people are kind of panicked on what we've seen so far. He's always performed extremely well towards the end of the season. The schedule lightens up. Things can come around, man. You just can't doubt the guy. How many times have we counted this guy out for his age or something, and he's proved us wrong? I'm ready to go down with the ship, baby. Derrick Henry.
I mean, it's been about what, 5-6 years in a row at this point, and he refuses to go down. So, yeah, I'm absolutely with you on that for sure. And we can keep things in the AFC North as we get into talking about the New York Jets somehow, despite having no passing attack whatsoever, defeating the Cleveland Browns. I don't have a ton to say about the Jets at all, but I want to highlight the absurdity of this for people. If you didn't pay attention to this game on Sunday, I get it, because why would you? The New York Jets' leading target earner in this contest was Garrett Wilson with 3 targets. He caught none of them and left the game with a knee injury. He's probably going to be out for the next few weeks. And then only one other pass catcher, tight end Mason Taylor, had double-digit targets. 2, to be exact. He caught one pass for 4 yards. Everybody else that had a pass come their way was just one single target. And Justin Fields ends the game with 54 passing yards. And they won. I needed to spell that out so that people can really sit with that. Let it simmer. Let it process. That passing attack won an NFL football game.
Yeah, playing the Browns. God knows anything could happen, man. G-Will's out for a couple weeks. I mean, Breece Hall is an RB2 every week because we see what it only takes one, right? It takes one run or one caught pass for Breece Hall to run a 40, 50-yarder. And so I'm pretty confident starting Breece Hall. But that's really all we're looking at here on the Jets side of the ball. And then the Browns, Quinshon Judkins continues to dominate touches there. You know, I did see Jerry Jeudy finally get some usage. I made a joke. I was like, wow, Jerry Jeudy has, double-digit targets and the Browns lose. Like, a long time Jerry Jeudy hater here. I personally hope he succeeds, as always, but he's never been a fantasy asset that I've been a big fan of. But Dylan Sampson seems to be getting some more third down work. It seems like he's really taken over Jerome Ford's role, something to think about in terms of like a stash. When we saw Judkins go down, they had a bye last week, but the week before that, Judkins got hurt, healed up during the bye. It was Sampson who was getting most of the looks when Judkins went out of the game. So I think that Sampson is the direct handcuff to Judkins. A little bit more of a kind of a sneakier, kind of deeper stash, I think, but still worth getting them on your bench. The tight ends are the tight ends. We've talked about them so many times at this point in time where I don't necessarily love starting either one of them, but like you certainly got to roster them and get them out there. I don't have a ton from the Brown side of the ball.
Neither do I. So we can just transition into our next matchup. Why don't we? The New England Patriots traveled to Tampa Bay and defeated the Buccaneers. And the most exciting part about this entire thing is the fact that Travion Henderson looked really good and he got a lot of work. Wasn't that so fun? He had a couple touchdowns, went over 100 rushing yards on the ground, man. Is it finally here? Is this happening? Is it finally happening?
It's like one of those things where like I feel like, you know, we hyped Henderson up. We were part of the fantasy football cult that was hyping Henderson was the reason he moved up so high. And he's been up to the last week, like one of the biggest busts. I will say this is when we were drafting Travion Henderson in the third or fourth round, it was with this assumption of rational coaching. Right. That was like a huge piece of this is we thought you'd get your best back out there. But we know my brother texted me the other day. He's like, yeah, of course we haven't seen Henderson. Vrabel's the same guy that started Deion Lewis over Derrick Henry. I'm like, makes sense. Now here we are. But where we are with things with the situation is if Ramondre's back, man, I have no reason to believe that they're just going to hand this over to Henderson. I really don't. I want this to stick. But, like, if Ramondre's healthy next week, if he got 60% of the snaps, dude, I would not be surprised. It's like, I think this is, like, it hurts for me to say that. But, like, honestly, I think that's the smart, like, play. Like, why, Travion broke out. Like, they know he's this fast. They've always known Travion Henderson's this fast and this good.
Yeah.
We saw in the preseason, but it didn't matter. They're still rolling out Ramondre. So, yeah, it was great to see. We know he's that good. But man, I have a suspicion, I have a feeling that when Ramondre comes back, that it's still going to be, you know, maybe a little bit more goes to Travion. But man, it pains me to say it, but dude, I would be surprised if Travion took over this backfield with his performance. Any other offense, he should, but with this one, I just don't think he does with the Patriots and Vrabel, man.
And you know, I always say when it comes to these, especially like younger, like rookie breakouts and stuff, like how could you put the genie back in the bottle? You know, sometimes you just have to roll what's worth working, but like it's the New England Patriots. It's like you said, like this coaching staff, they're going to do whatever they feel is necessary, whatever sort of logic be damned. And staying on the Patriots just briefly with this receiving core, I mean, not a ton to take away. But I mean, Stephon Diggs is continuing to be involved. Kayshon Boutte out with an injury. So anything else from some of these other guys might be a little bit rough to try to take any huge sort of, you know, analysis from. But I want to shout out Mr. Kyle Williams with a 72-yard touchdown. I brought him up last week. He only got two targets. Don't add him off the waiver wire. There's really no point. But you dynasty bag holders, this was the hope. This was so fun. I just had to shout that out because I was feeling pretty good about it. But any other thoughts on the Patriots, or do you just want to go over to the Bucs?
I just thought to say, like, hey, Diggs is probably the only player I trust. You know, we've seen Pop Douglas pop off. No pun intended. You know, obviously we've seen Diggs pop off. We've seen Kyle Williams pop off. We've seen Boutte. You know, Hunter Henry's had a couple of big weeks. End of the day, it's like we're trusting Drake May. We're trusting Drake May, who's like playing like a low key. Like he's not going to win the MVP, I don't think, but his name should at least be talked about. I think at this point in time, the Pats are still back, and Drake May is getting it done. It's just good to see the Patriots take a step forward. I'm not a Patriots fan. I spent a lot of my younger years hating the Patriots, but I've always been a huge fan of Drake May, and I'm just happy that he's finding a lot of success there and things have turned around. So shout out Drake May.
And also, just, you know, Mike Vrabel seems like a pretty chill dude, so good for him as well. But Tampa Bay, though, man, this offense is so banged up that I don't really have a ton to say about them. I'll let you get into whatever, but the only thing I have, tight end, if you need one, just pick up Kate Otten. He's getting so many targets. He's getting such great utilization. It just makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, and Tez Johnson's looking like they're scheming stuff for him. He continues to be a flex play. We know who Igbuka is. He's a top eight play every single week. The thing I would like to shout out is, you know, Sean Tucker's closing the gap, and rightfully so. We talked about it for years, where Rashad White is a very poor runner of the football, but he's a great pass catcher, and he's being thrusted into a role that was Bucky Irving's. And it makes sense that they should be giving more touches, more rushes, more particularly to Sean Tucker, where I do think in a bit of a pinch, maybe in a deeper league, Sean Tucker deserves to get a stash, as he could get a little bit more run here. I would still prefer Rashad White, as he probably will still get some goal line work, and we know he'll catch passes. It's still Rashad White over Sean Tucker, but rightfully so, I believe Sean Tucker deserves to get some more work. And honestly, the Bucky Irving stuff is pretty scary. Someone who's asking me, like, hey, when do you think Bucky's going to be back? The answer is I have no idea. We're not getting anything. It sounds like he's out week 11. I would guess week 13, it's his shoulder right now that's holding him out. But, like, you know, that still leaves up some space for Rashad White, and I think Sean Tucker to maybe be viable going forward here. But Baker Mayfield's out, you know, he's down arguably as, you know, 1-2 kind of wide receiver in some ways here, and he's still finding a way, and he didn't win this one, but still finding ways to get some points on the board. So the Buccaneers are still an excited fantasy offense, even with Tez Otten, Igbuka, and Rashad White. I mean, they're down a lot of playmakers, and they're still looking good.
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty remarkable thing that they've been able to pull off, especially, you know, given just how few weapons they have, like you said, health-wise, which is how I transition into talking about the New Orleans Saints beating the Carolina Panthers. I thought that was a little bit surprising. Panthers have been looking actually low-key pretty good this season, but that's, you know, probably more of a real-life football discussion. Alvin Kamara looked good. Are you buying it at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think I am. I mean, a ton of touches in this one, man. I think I'm generally buying it. The Saints are going to struggle in tougher matchups. It's just they do not have the offensive firepower to compete against a really good defense in the Panthers. While they have put together some good games, we know they're not a very good defense. So I think Kamara's a fine RB2 rest of season. No problem there. Olave, Juwan Johnson, obviously they're going to be good streamers. Rashid Shaheed's out of town, kind of opens things up, or I should say kind of condenses things. And Juwan Johnson, it should be a streamer, a preferred streamer at the position. Probably should be, you know, in most leagues, picked up, especially if it's tight end premium. And then Olave, you know, he continues to be kind of like a volatile wide receiver too, right? Just based on volume and the fact that he is a talented guy. I would say Shuck looked better in this. I made a joke the other day where, like, I do think Tyler Shuck's like ceiling is like Davis Mills. Like, that's kind of who I think he is. Like, which isn't great, but I think he could be like, you know, he could string together a couple of good games as a starter, but probably should be a backup. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're what we expected from the Saints out of the trade deadline,
yeah,
I was impressed. It was better than I thought.
They're kind of cooking. It's pretty interesting. It'll be fun to see if they're able to keep this up. I'm rooting for Tyler Shuck. I was not a particularly big fan of his as a prospect either, but you know what? As long keep proving us wrong, man. Keep going out there and just giving it your all. On the Panther side of things, though, Rico Dowdle still has a massive stranglehold on the backfield. Tet McMillan is still good. Is there anything else?
No, we can move along, man. You pretty much summed exactly what I had written here, which was Rico Dowdle is the running back. Tet McMillan, solid. Move along. We're set.
Yeah. Hey, you know, speaking of Mr. Davis Mills, the Houston Texans beating the Jacksonville Jaguars in this one. Davis Mills out there nearly tossed for 300 yards, a couple scores. That was pretty sick. You know, hopefully we see CJ Stroud back in the lineup soon. But this backfield is still interesting to me. I know people kind of grew a little bit tired of the whole Woody Marks thing. And like, yes, there are obvious limitations with this offense, but he keeps producing and I think he's pretty good. So like, I'm only bringing it up because I just want people to put respect on his name. Any other thoughts on the Houston Texans or, you know, any of these pass catchers or anything like that?
I mean, Dalton Schultz seems viable, like in the same breath of Juwan Johnson, right? In terms of like how we're thinking about the tight ends. Like if you're hurting for tight ends or some of you, like, you know, for example, you know, we'll get to it, but it looks like Gadsden, you know, could miss a week here. It looks like he has a bone bruise of some sorts or quad bruise. I would be looking at like Dalton Schultz and Juwan Johnson on waivers or Kate Otten. Like, you know, there's this kind of tier of like, these aren't guys you're excited to roll out, but, you know, they're certainly viable considering what could, you know, the volume that's going their way. Nico continues to be like an upside wide receiver too for me, but Woody Marks has taken over and I'm pretty thrilled to see it, man. I don't really know if I trust any other pass catchers. They'll have their weeks, they'll have their days, but I think Dalton Schultz is kind of solid considering the position. And that's that. I mean, Davis Mills was all right in this one. Again, he was all right.
Yeah, he outperformed Trevor Lawrence, which I don't think I would have had on my bingo card. But, you know, that is kind of the story of this game for this Jags offense. It was okay. I mean, Travis Etienne had himself a decent day, but Trevor Lawrence, not so much. Under 200 passing yards, not a whole heck of a lot from some of these pass catchers. I still think Parker Washington is interesting. He did see seven targets in this game. And Jacoby Myers, for being somebody who's still new to the team, getting him integrated as much as they did right away was kind of neat, but overall the whole thing kind of fell flat.
Yeah. I mean, Parker Washington should be added for sure. I mean, he's clearly playing to the best of his ability right now and he's doing well. Shout out Parker Washington. Jacoby Myers isn't really on my radar for redraft right now. We'll see if he can work into a better role. It's very much possible, but I think that like, when I look at this team, the only player right now in terms of healthy players that I'm starting is ETN. You know, we can kind of see, obviously Hunter's on IR. We'll kind of have to see where BTJ is at. Even if he's healthy, he's still a very scary start. But, you know, Parker Washington, I think, is, you know, if you're in like a 12-team league and you're hurt with byes and injuries and you have like three wide receiver slots, like, sure, put Parker Washington in there. Yeah, it was so funny. Last week I was, I had a lot of questions. I did a Reddit AMA and I probably got the question like six times. Parker Washington or Tez Johnson? And I kept saying Tez, and ended up they both were great. Really couldn't have gone wrong there, man. Couldn't have gone wrong. But those are the kind of players where like, hey, these are guys that were on no one's radar preseason that have worked because of injury, have worked themselves into a role, and have looked good. So shout out to players like that are doing it. I think Parker Washington is fine. I think if you're like in a 10-team league with like two wide receivers and one flex, no, don't worry about Parker Washington. But in your deeper leagues, you know, say two flexes, three wide receivers, 12-team, 14-team, sure. Parker Washington should be on your radar for your waiver.
Another player on the Jaguars that should be on people's radars. Now, he's not healthy, but he is working his way back and is eligible to return from injured reserve soon, and that is tight end Brenton Strange, who, if we remember, through that first month of the season, 15.5% target share, 5.8 targets per game, and one of only 13 tight ends in September with a snap share over 75%. So if you just want to go like sort of long-term stash, sort of try to take advantage, especially if you're playing in some sort of tight end premium format, just if you have the spot, wait until Brenton Strange comes back. I think he might end up being a low-key contributor down the line. Obviously, that's a deeper league consideration. You have to have a deep enough bench to do it, but I wanted to get that out there. I want to just remind people how good he was before he got hurt. Now, we get into the NFC West, a game where the Seattle Seahawks absolutely just torched the Arizona Cardinals, but I gotta say, even though they didn't win this game, the passing offense still looked pretty good with Jacoby Brissett under center. And I know people like to talk about like, it's finally unleashing Marvin Harrison Jr. and all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. Trey McBride, though, dude, what Trey McBride has been doing ever since Jacoby Brissett has been under center, he's finding the end zone with significantly more regularity. He's pushing 20 PPR points most of the time. This guy is absolutely bonkers good. And this is more of a dynasty thing in general, but with this performance and the possibility that Arizona might move on from Kyler Murray, I think the conversation between McBride and Brock Bowers as tight end one is back on. I really do think it's a fun discussion to be had.
Absolutely, man. And that was a discussion in the, you know, in the preseason. I mean, most people lean Bowers for sure. But that is absolutely part of the discussion, man. I mean, I don't have a ton. Like, they're going to live on garbage time. Brissett had, I think, over 40 passes in this one. It's really just McBride and Marvin Harrison. You know, the running back situation is a mess. Clearly, it's like swinging the way of DeMarcado. But there's somebody that might be on waivers that's been on IR for a bit that we might need to turn our attention to, Herms.
Yeah, if you don't remember, Trey Benson is the guy that they really wanted to be the next man up when James Conner got hurt. He was, I believe, the third round draft pick of the team just last year. Somebody that they believe in a lot, and especially with Bam Knight injuring his ankle in this contest, we're stuck in another week of, okay, we got to chase somebody from this Cardinals backfield. Who's it going to be? Yes, I do agree DeMarcado's probably the best choice if you need immediate help, but I do think the long-term answer is probably Trey Benson. So that would be the person that I would be attacking on this roster. Unless you have any other thoughts on the Cardinals, we can turn it over to the Seattle Seahawks and talk about backfields that annoy me, man. I said this in our group chat. I don't even care that I'm wrong about Ken Walker. It's fine. I missed. Whatever. It's not going to be a huge breakout season, but Clint Kubiak, for my sanity, for my emotional well-being, stop distributing the touches this way. It is killing everyone. Fantasy managers everywhere are so upset.
Dude, and then, like, I remember I saw George Helaini score a touchdown, and I knew it wasn't Charbonnet, and I got excited because I was like, is that Ken Walker? Nope. Nope. Of course not. We can't trust Walker from here on out. I mean, there's certainly like players that like, I would rather play Walker than Devin Singletary. Right. But at the same time, like ideally we're in a position where we don't have to trot Walker out there. I don't think Charbonnet is very good, but he's going to get the touchdowns because they want to play him when he's there. And the Seahawks are so damn good that they're winning 35-0 by throwing the ball less than 15 times. JSN really is the only piece that I want in the passing attack for real. I think there's other pieces can make a case if you absolutely need to, but I think it's pretty straightforward outside of the running back room for Seattle. I mean, they're one of the best teams in football right now, and if you don't think that, just watch them play.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate Rashid Shaheed didn't pop off, but remember, folks, it was his first game with the team after being traded, so we'll see how that ends up working out long term. But yeah, otherwise, it's a pretty simple offense. We love JSN. Just keep it cooking as normal. Shout out Sam Darnold for being good at playing football. We'll keep this in the NFC West with the other matchup. The Los Angeles Rams ended up beating the San Francisco 49ers. The Rams offense is pretty straightforward. We kind of say the same things about them every single week. The 49ers, they continue to have certain guys, you know, missing with injury and stuff. Brock Purdy's still not back. I don't have any new flavor to add to the discussion for either of these two teams. So I'm just going to turn it over to you and anything you might have.
Yeah, I mean, Pearsall might be coming back for the Niners, something to look out for. But, you know, I still stand by Juwan Jennings over Pearsall. If they're both playing, I want Jennings over Pearsall. Probably a little bit of a hot take. If you're banking on Pearsall coming back from the Rams, for the 49ers, like, I don't think that you are getting anything here, man. I don't have anything too much to add here. Everything is exactly what we think it is. We saw Brian Robinson a little bit more in this one. I don't necessarily think he's anything more than a handcuff. And then I would like to say I have no updates for the Rams. We've touched on this week after week that we're seeing more Corum. Again, another elite kind of asset there. Another, I would say elite is that elite handcuff in Corum, but I don't think that he's anything more than that, man. Stafford's absolutely cooking and it's a beautiful thing. We'll see what they do with Purdy, but I don't think this offense changes much from a fantasy asset or a fantasy standpoint. With Mac Jones or Purdy under center, I think they're pretty interchangeable.
I tend to agree. So we'll close out this show by talking about our favorite football teams. Let's do this. We'll start with you and your Detroit Lions absolutely sticking it to the Washington Commanders, the Jaden Daniels-less Washington Commanders, the Terry McLaurin-less Washington Commanders, and the Washington Commanders that just do not have a functional backfield whatsoever. I'm not that excited about playing really anybody outside of Deebo Samuel and Zach Ertz. Marcus Mariota, low-key, pretty good streamer, though. If you need a quarterback, I still think he can keep it rocking just a little bit. He keeps things afloat, but like, I'm not enthusiastic about this offense at all. It's a lost season, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to add there. I think you absolutely crushed exactly how I feel about the Commanders. The Lions, like, they did exactly what we needed them to do. Dan Campbell took over play calling. Things looked absolutely beautiful. Jameson Williams kind of broke out last week, absolutely broke out this week. It's good to see them really focusing on getting that playmaker the ball. And it's just crazy. I guess the last thing I'll say is Gibbs is doing what he's doing on like a 50% snap count. Just imagine if they gave him 80%, he would be the best running back in the league. So it was a beautiful game, a beautiful thing, but nothing too much to add, man. Let's go to yours.
Yeah. Sunday night gave us a football game. The Pittsburgh Steelers tried to play football against the Los Angeles Chargers, but they did not do a very good job, losing 25-10. I'm just going to go for it. Here's all the things that I had to say about the Steelers. It's embarrassing. This offense is ridiculous. Arthur Smith is basically taking no chances. He's spreading so much work across three different tight ends. If you just picked one, we could have somebody fantasy relevant, but no, of course, it has to be three different people. I don't understand it at all. DK Metcalf, it's just frustrating. At least Jalen Warren's pretty good. At least they feed him enough volume, but it's just so unimaginative. It's so ball control-y. They just have no interest in actually taking this offense into the 21st century. I don't know. I can't stand it. I don't care if this entire coaching staff is gone next year. That's all I have to say.
I mean, I don't have anything to add because I think you put it perfectly. Chargers, we're watching out for Gadsden. It looks like he had a knee, hurt his knee, but I think it came out as a quad. He might miss 1 week, but it doesn't seem serious. So really kind of breathe a sigh of relief there as he's been pretty transcendent for a couple of my teams. Kamani Vindal just continues to eat. Looks like we're going to be getting Kamani Vindal for at least a couple more weeks. I'm not seeing anything that's suggesting that Hampton's coming off IR soon. I think one report I saw was like week 13 or 14. So we're at least got a couple more weeks of Kamani Vindal. And then,
yeah,
dude, Ladd McConkey, man, let's talk about the wide receivers here for a second, because I think like, we thought Ladd was like the lowest in the pecking order to start the season, and Quentin Johnson was the highest. And while Quentin Johnson did see a lot of targets, it's kind of like maybe old man Keenan Allen's running out a little bit of steam here, and Ladd McConkey is really coming along. Where, you know, I didn't check where Ladd McConkey is in terms of, you know, his wide receiver rank so far, but he's really kind of putting those doubters, you know, to shame here that we're kind of calling for him as an absolute bust to start the season.
I completely agree. And it's one of the things that I highlighted in the last usage report. You know, I tried my best to measure the Aronde Gadsden effect on this offense. And you're right. The guy who's losing out ultimately the most is Keenan Allen, which makes sense at his age. He's definitely on the back nine. And cool that he had that record-setting performance. He became the Chargers' all-time receptions leader. That was nice, but it's still very limited involvement for him. I think we probably would have seen perhaps even less from him. I think he maybe only got some of those five targets because Aronde Gadsden got hurt. But yeah, if you doubted Ladd McConkey, you know, it's not looking too good for you. I think it is definitely a nice little resurgence that he's seeing. And if you bought low in Dynasty, you are probably feeling pretty good about that decision right now. Any other final thoughts on this game before we head out of here?
Herms, I don't have any. Let's get out of here.
So, folks, if you like the type of analysis that we do, then I have great news. We do this podcast every single week, and we both have articles that come out regularly on ftnfantasy.com. That is where you can find the rest of our content, all the other amazing work that our coworkers do. And also, we got some pretty cool stuff. Like, if our waiver recommendations we made during the show didn't necessarily appeal to you and you're looking for some deeper names, our waiver wire tool, powered by the brain of Jeff Ratcliffe, has tons of great suggestions, DST streamers, and even kicker stuff too. Especially if you're looking for like fab budget advice, it's not something we do very often, but that waiver wire tool does. Check all of that stuff out. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you all next week. This has been the Crossing Routes podcast. Adios. Think about it.